You'll turn to 2 Samuel chapter number 13 tonight. 2 Samuel chapter number 13. We continue tonight in our study of the story that we began last Wednesday evening. Tonight I want us to look at the danger of the sin of covetousness, because that's really what the sin was in Amnon's heart. The Bible says that covetousness is a form of idolatry over in Colossians 3:5. In fact, we could say that covetousness is idolatry of the heart that has led to the destruction of the lives of many people, and both can and will lead to the destruction of our lives if we don't handle it properly in our own lives. It goes back to, you know, covetousness is tied closely with that lust in the heart. It's wanting something you don't have. We could say that what led to David's sin of adultery was covetousness. What led to Amnon's sin here of raping his sister was covetousness. He had a wrong desire that should not have been there. Now, we must deal with sin at the root, or else it will overtake us. And if we're overtaken by sin, if we then try to hide it, it can and will destroy the lives of others. Last week, we talked about the influence of friends and the need to have the right kind of friends. Amnon had a friend, but he was the wrong kind of friend. We saw that. We saw how that in verse 3 of this chapter, Jonadab was called a friend of Amnon. And this so-called friend set up this plan so that Amnon could fulfill lust, which was burning out of control in his life, so he could follow through on his covetous desires to have his half-sister. I want you to see, first of all, idolatry of the heart breeds deception. We see as this story develops how that King David was deceived by his son Amnon. Now, we dealt with the first six verses, and I want to pick up in verse 6 and look at verse 6 and 7. And here is where Amnon is carrying through on Jonadab's encouragement to him to get his way. And it says here, so Amnon, verse 6, so Amnon lay down and made himself sick. When the king was come to see him, Amnon said unto the king, I pray thee, let Tamar, my sister, come and make me a couple of cakes in my sight, that I may eat at her hand. Then David sent home to Tamar, saying, go now to thy brother Amnon's house, and dress him meat. Now, we know Amnon really wasn't sick. He was sin sick. But, you know, he was physically sick. And he was deceiving his father. David is the one who sent Tamar into the lion's den here unknowingly. Remember earlier how David, in the fulfillment of his own covetousness and the cover-up of his sin of adultery with Bathsheba, he had attempted to deceive Uriah. Remember that deception? And now we see David was being deceived by his firstborn son, Amnon. You know, what goes around comes around, they say. Well, we see it coming around on him. Amnon was willing to break his father's trust. Amnon went to bed and pretended to be gravely ill. And King David became worried about him and went to check on his condition. And when the king arrived, Amnon spoke in, I'm sure, the most weakest, most pathetic voice his dad ever heard him speak in. Don't you think he was putting on a good show? And he said that it would make him feel better if his sister Tamar would come bake him some of his favorite cakes in his sight and feed it to him. Now, David had no reason to be suspicious of this request. He told Tamar to go to her brother and do as he asked. And so he goes. Look at verse number 8. So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was laid down, and she took flour and kneaded it and made cakes in his sight and did bake the cakes. And she took a pan, poured them out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, have out all men from me, And they went out every man from him. And Amnon said unto Tamar, bring the meat into the chamber, that I may eat of thine hand. And Tamar took the cakes which she had made, brought them into the chamber to Amnon her brother. When she had brought them unto him to eat, he took hold of her and said unto her, come lie with me, my sister. So we see here that Tamar arrives at Amnon's quarters. And later we're told in verse number 18 that she was dressed in a beautiful multicolored robe that was the customary clothing of the king's daughters who were virgins. And she was a virgin. And Amnon played his part well. He's reclined. He's feigning sickness. Tamar begins to make these cakes. And all the while, he's there lusting after her innocent beauty. His intent was to fulfill his lust without any regard to robbing her of her innocence. He was focused upon himself. When you're focused upon yourself, you don't care about other people. And Amnon deceived everyone around him. It wasn't until he was alone in his chamber with Tamar that he revealed his true motive. We see that idolatry of the heart breeds deception. Second thing I want you to see is idolatry of the heart brings destruction. When Tamar refused Amnon's invitation, he took it upon himself to take what he wanted. Well, if you're not going to give it willingly, I'm going to take it. He used brute force and raped his sister, Tamar, and by doing so, he sowed destruction. Notice verse number 12. It says, and she answered him, nay, my brother, do not force me. She probably saw it in his in his eyes. He said, for no such thing ought to be done in Israel. Do not thou this folly. I mean, they were part of God's people. Amen. That's what she was pointing out. That this, you know, this is not the way we're supposed to be in Israel. And don't do this foolishness that you're thinking about doing. Verse 13, she said, and I, whither shall I cause my shame to go? Excuse me. And as for thee, thou shalt be as one of the fools in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, speak unto the king, for he will not withhold me from thee. In other words, she said, you just need to talk to our daddy, and maybe he'll give you my hand in marriage. We know back during this time that was done. As long as you weren't full blood, if you were just partially related, sometimes that would happen. But he wasn't going to have any of that. Verse 14, howbeit he would not hearken unto her voice, but being stronger than she, forced her and lay with her. So when Tamar refused Amnon's invitation, here he forces the situation. Now we know his father had set a bad example in his fornication. I want you to see that his father set a bad example in his fornication, but Amnon took this thing to a whole new level. What you do, those who follow you are going to do in excess. Okay? Look at the facts here. Amnon was the crown prince of Israel. He was David's firstborn son. He was the rightful heir to the throne. We talked about that last week. Amnon was warned by Tamar that he would be considered a fool if he did this. None of this stuff is registering with Amnon. He's got his mind on one thing and one thing only. One track mind. Okay? Amnon went from royal son and heir to the throne to a fool in Israel, and all for a moment of time of pleasure. He was the crown prince, but he was so blind that he was willing to give up his royal reputation for lust. Isn't it amazing that someone with so much would allow their lust to control their lives in such a way that they end up destroying all that they have for a moment's pleasure? The idolatry of lust is a sure path to destruction. We see that idolatry of the heart renders a person blind to destruction, not only themselves, but the destruction of others. He had no idea what he was doing to his sister, the rest of her life. But he practically destroyed the rest of her life. Amnon was given an option by Tamar. Notice the composure that she has as this scene unfolds. She's trying to talk him out of this on her part, but it turns violent and it turns ugly. In verse 13, she suggests that Amnon, instead of doing this, what he's doing, to do the right thing and just marry her. She was willing to be married to this wicked man. She tried to convince him that marriage was better than this. And she first warned him of the shame that it would bring to herself and to himself. But Amnon was not concerned about the shame that Tamar would experience. I want you to look down at verse number 19. I'm going to skip down to there. This is after the event. After he's forced his sister. Verse 19 says, "And Tamar put ashes on her head." She's grieving. She's mourning. Her virginity is lost. She put ashes on her head, rent her garment of diverse colors that was on her, laid her hand on her head, and went on crying. It's basically that she went on crying. The idea behind that is, She could not be calmed. She continued to cry. She went on crying. "And Absalom, her brother, said unto her, 'Hath Amnon thy brother been with thee? But hold now thy peace, my sister. He is thy brother.'" In other words, he's trying to get her to just cover it up for now, because Absalom is going to take care of this thing himself. And it's 2 years later when he does it. But he's got in mind, he wanted to be the one to take care of it. He said, "He is thy brother, regard not this thing." So Tamar remained desolate. Look at that. Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. So we see here, Tamar was an innocent victim of Amnon's wickedness. She wound up being deeply broken over this. The verse says that she remained desolate, which implies that she never got over what happened. Never got over it. It means she remained devastated. In fact, it's really what that word, that phrase, remained desolate. She was devastated from that point forward. Amnon was blind to whatever shame it brought to her. His only care was to fulfill his lust. And we see that Amnon was not concerned about the shame that this would bring to him or any of his family. Again, he was blind to that. It affected his father David. Let's take a look at the effect that it had on his father David. Look at verse 21. "But when King David heard of all these things, he was very wroth." He got mad. It brought him anger, but it also brought him grief. Look down in verse number 30. This is 2 years down the road when Absalom finally carries out his plan to take Amnon's life, and he does so. And here comes a messenger saying that basically Absalom has killed all the king's sons. Verse 30. "So as it came to pass, while they were in the way, that tidings came to David, saying, 'Absalom has slain all the king's sons, and there's not one of them left.'" And see, all this was put in motion by Amnon. Well, we say, well, it really was put in motion by David himself, wasn't it? Because all of this is as a result of what the Lord said would happen, that the sword would never depart out of David's house. But we see it brought anger, it brought grief. There in verse number 31 says, "Then the king arose, tear his garments, lay on the earth, and all his servants stood by with their clothes rent." So that's a symbol of grief there. Jonadab, remember him? That's the friend. Jonadab, the son of Shimeab, David's brother, answered and said, "Let not my lord suppose that they have slain all the young men and the king's sons, for Amnon only is dead." And notice this phrase here. "For by the appointment of Absalom, This hath been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. In other words, this has been in the plans for 2 years now, David. This has been in plan. Absalom's had this in plan all along. And it says, "Now therefore let not my lord the king take the thing to his heart to think that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon only is dead." So it brought to David, it affected David, brought him anger and grief. It affected his brother Absalom. There in verses 22 through 29, notice verse 22. "Absalom spake unto his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad." In other words, he's hiding his emotions here. He don't want Absalom to know what he's got planned for him. "So for Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. And it came to pass after 2 full years that Absalom," and we hear the story here of him getting Amnon separated, getting him out there, basically got him drunk, got his heart married, down in verse number 28. "Now Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, Mark ye now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say unto you, smite Amnon, then kill him. Fear not. Have not I commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant." And the servants of Absalom did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded. And all the king's sons arose, and every man got him up upon his mule and fled. Now I want you to notice there, it not only affected Absalom, but here it instilled fear in the king's sons. I mean, they didn't know what was going on. They thought Absalom was going to get them too. But it brought Absalom anger and bitterness. Bitterness dwelt in him for 2 years. The longer bitterness dwells, the more caustic it becomes. And it affected Absalom in a very definite way. We see that that Absalom fled. Notice verse 34. "But Absalom fled." Notice also in verse 37. "But Absalom fled, went to Talmai, the son of that fellow right there." Okay, I'm not going to try to get that. But it says that David mourned for his son every day. Now, was he mourning for Absalom or was he mourning for Amnon? We're not told there. I think he was mourning for both, really. He's mourning that he lost Amnon to murder, and mourning that he lost Absalom in the process, that he had fled and gone somewhere else. But this shows the destructive nature of the idolatry of the heart, called lust. Amnon did not stop to consider the consequences that would devastate his life, that would devastate Tamar's life, his dad's life, his brother's life, or even the effect that it would have on Israel. Again, he was supposed to be the crown prince. Now, we know through all this, him being killed and all, eventually Solomon becomes king after David passes off the scene. But the way things should have been Amnon's right. But for that moment of pleasure, Amnon basically threw his life away. He was blinded, and he became like an animal, forced himself upon Tamar. So idolatry of the heart breeds deception. Idolatry of the heart brings destruction. And then I want you to see, last of all, that idolatry of the heart blocks delight. It blocks delight. Look at verse 15. And this is after he's forced. Verse 14 tells us the act of him forcing and raping his sister. And then verse 15 is the aftermath, the beginning of the aftermath. It says here, "Then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. And Amnon said unto her, Arise, be gone." In other words, get out of here. "And she said unto him, There is no cause. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst to me. But he would not hearken unto her." And he called his servant that ministered unto him and said, put now this woman out from me and bolt the door after her. We see here the thing that Amnon thought was going to bring him delight only did so for a brief moment. I'm sure he was delighted at that one brief moment, but then it was blocked by his guilt. There's no lasting pleasure in sin. There can be pleasure, but it's only for a season, according to Hebrews 11:25. It's only temporary. When the pleasure's over, then the reality sets in. And we see reality didn't take very long for it to set in, what he had done. We see that this so-called love that he had for his sister Tamar, which really wasn't love at all, it was lust. True love looks out for the other person. Lust looks out for yourself. His love turned immediately to hate. Was this caused by his now guilty conscience? Well, possibly. But maybe her beauty now reminded him of his own inward ugliness. The guilt of sin barred his continued delight. I mean, think about how is verse 15 even possible? Once Amnon's desire of lust was acted on, Amnon's conscience overtook him, and he did what most people try to do. They try to hide their sin. I ain't done nothing wrong. Amnon could put Tamar out. He could lock her out of his sight, but God would not allow him to run from his sin. Numbers 32:23 says, be sure your sin will find you out. It may have taken 2 years for him to be found out, but he got what was coming to him. Maybe that reality hit him of what might happen to him when Tamar's brother found out. He knew he messed up. He knew Absalom was going to have a problem. Absalom and Tamar were full brother-sister. And he knew Absalom wasn't going to like this. Before, he was thinking only of the act, but after the act came the reality of what he had done. He'd messed up big time. The guilt of sin, we see, also bore on his demeanor. I believe that what we see of Amnon here clearly comes from the guilt of his sin bearing down on him. This sin literally followed Amnon all the way to his grave. We have no record at all that Amnon ever saw the evil of his way or tried to get right with Tamar. He never tried to get right with Absalom. He never tried to get right with his father David. And now David seems to have softened the consequences of sin for Amnon. He should have judged Amnon according to the law, but instead he just chose not to deal with it. When you read this, what was going on here, David didn't do anything to Amnon. I mean, it was 2 years before anything was done, and Absalom is the one that did it. David didn't do anything. He should have judged Amnon according to the law. It was in his hand to do that. But instead, he just chose not to deal with it. David was angry, but apparently he did nothing. And could that be because of his own sin? See, sometimes when we're involved in the same type of sin, we just kind of let things slide, don't we? And the law demanded that David deal with his son's sin. David was the chief magistrate and judge in all of Israel, being the king. And he had a responsibility to bring justice to the situation. What was justice? Well, according to Leviticus 20 and verse 17, the punishment for the crime that Amnon transgressed was to be banished from Israel. He should have been banished. David wasn't willing to do that. David overlooked his son's sin. He did not punish him. If the king won't enforce the law, where can you go? You know, Absalom later used that against his father to promote insurrection against his father. Listen to 2 Samuel 15, verse 4. Absalom said, moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me, and I would do him justice. In other words, he was implying that his dad was not seeing that justice was carried out. We need to beware of sin's diluting power. It seems as if David had become a member of the Sweep It Under the Rug Society. He should have brought out what occurred and judged it before the nation. David should have judged his son, but he did not. He might could have avoided Amnon's murder had he done so. He might have saved two sons, might have saved both Amnon and Absalom in the process, but he did nothing. Then again, we know that this is all part of the consequences of David's sins, and maybe that's why he lightened up and didn't take care of the situation. Now, I want to leave you one final thought. Does this being part of the consequences of David's sin alleviate Amnon from the guilt of his sin? Not one iota. We are responsible for our own actions. We're responsible. You know, generations before you, you may have some of your people that you don't even know that you're part of sin, and you've got some generational consequences that are in your bloodline. But you choose to do right or wrong. You choose. I choose. We choose. We have to make the right choices. Amnon did not. All right. That's the Bible study for tonight. Let's set it aside. We'll pray. And be dismissed.